Anar Mohammed has taken great personal risk to run a women's rights organization in Iraq. She was raised in Iraq but left in 1993. She moved to Canada with her son and husband and worked as an architect and sculptor. After the fall of Baghdad in 2003, Mohammed heard from a friend about new problems and issues facing Iraqi women. She returned to the country and co-founded the Organization for Women's Freedom in Iraq. Mohammed criticizes the war, which she says has cost Iraqi women their freedom and legal rights. Her outspokenness and activities on behalf of Iraqi women have earned her both acclaim and numerous death threats. Terry Gross spoke to Mohammed earlier this month while she was in the U.S.
Anar Mohammed, welcome to Fresh Air. The invasion of Iraq was supposed to be helpful for women's rights in Iraq. How have women's rights been affected by the invasion and occupation?
When we speak about women's rights, there are many parts of it. There's the legislation on one side, but the side of it which all of us women feel and live on daily basis is the way you go to work, when you come back home, how you're being treated inside your home, and also the streets, whether they are women-friendly or not. Since the invasion in 2003, March 2003, it was only a few months before we started to receive horrifying news that women are being kidnapped on the streets.
What are the kidnappings about?
There were different reports, but mostly it was young women who were kidnapped to be sexually exploited for a few days and then thrown on the side of the street. And the sad part of the story is that when some of those women tried to go back to their houses, to their families, a good number of them were killed by their families because the whole issue was considered honorless. It has smeared the honor of the family, and it was, scary to hear that first you can be kidnapped in the street by strangers who want to exploit you sexually. And why would they do that? Just simply because they can. There is no police, there is no government, nobody to stop them. And at that time, there was a big number of criminals that have left the prisons, so they were free to do whatever they wanted in the streets. The ousting of the regime involves too many kinds of chaotic issues where we find out that women are the most vulnerable to. So in those days in Baghdad, walking in the streets was very dangerous. You could be targeted just because you were a woman.
And is that still going on now, the kidnappings?
The kidnappings go up and down because the situation is changing drastically and the reasons for the kidnappings have been changing. For some time, like in the first 2 years, the industry of trafficking of women had risen to numbers that were unprecedented in Iraq or unknown even. The numbers were in thousands. So at that time, it was in order to sell these women in sexual markets inside and outside Iraq. But later on, in this last year, we heard that a good number of kidnappings were in order to ask ransom from the rich families in order to give them back their daughters. And sadly, some of those families would say, we don't want them anymore because we don't know what you have done with them. So that's the honor-killing mentality. Mm-hmm. And the third part of the story, in the last, 4 to 5 months, we heard in some of the Baghdad suburbs that sometimes the many females in one family are kidnapped at once, detained or assaulted. And that's also a new story. And when we asked into the details, it turned out that what is similar to a death squad.
So are women being attacked by sectarian groups now?
At this moment, yes. A big number of women were attacked for sectarian reasons. Their houses, their families get attacked first, the men get detained, and when the house is empty of the males. These militias that are affiliates of the police and the Islamist Shiite militias, they go into the houses at... We received many reports that after the men were detained, the women were attacked in the houses, assaulted, and in many instances raped. A few of them were killed later on to not to leave any witnesses of the crime taking place. And in many situations, we hear that they were also kidnapped and sold.
Can you dress as you please on the streets of Baghdad now?
This was a question to be asked last year or the year before. I would have answered you, no, I cannot dress anymore in the way that I please. I cannot show my hair. I cannot walk around in the jeans and the t-shirt that I was used to wearing in Baghdad all my life. But this year, the situation is much tougher. It's not just the veil that you have to wear. It is the kind of veil that is the trademark of the Islamist militia that is prevailing in your neighborhood or in your district. That is, in the Shiite districts, you have to be veiled in black from top to bottom in a way that could show your face. But in some of the areas under the Sadr groups, the women have to do, to go further than that, they have to wear black gloves and black stockings so as not to show any part of their skin. While you go to the Sunni, the areas, the districts dominated by the Sunni Islamist militias, and those are, to make it clear here, most of those are affiliates of Al-Qaeda organization. In those areas, the women have to wear multi layers of clothes. They don't, they are not black usually. And you have, you know, not a single part of your skin can show, but the hands do not have gloves on them, and there is a part of your face that can show. So it's, your veil is the flag that they use on their districts to tell the enemies, this is our power zone. Dare not come into it. And your dress code is just the tool for that. But who is the woman inside that veil? Nobody cares.
How is this enforced?
It happened gradually. Last year, in the one of the suburbs in Baghdad, Shiite suburbs in Baghdad, it's called Cha'ab area, they began to hang, not posters, flyers on the wall saying that the women, first, the veil is the beauty of the women, and second, that you are not allowed to wear high sandals. You should not wear high sandals. You should not show your hair. And they give you details of what to wear and what not to wear. First, they publicize it. Second, they tell you that you do not look decent. You should not be coming like this, looking like this next day. And then they just start to force it on you, and beatings have become a regular matter in this issue. And in some of the areas, districts controlled by the Sunni Islamist militias, killing was very regular. We heard many reports of women killed in the Salman Pak area because they were not veiled. And sadly enough, some of the Christian women or the Mandai women who are not Muslim, and like in their faith, there is no such thing as veiling. And it was imposed on them, and a few of them threatened or a few of them killed because they did not wear the veil.
As president of the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq, are you now forced to work underground?
Actually, our women's shelters, we locate them in secret places, and we change those locations from time to time because the women that we keep in there are wanted for honor killing, and if anybody finds out their places, it's killing not just for them but also for us. But the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq, our headquarters in Baghdad, the address is known to everybody, and we get a good number of visitors on a daily basis. And it's part of our mission, let's say, in Iraq, to go open about challenging the misogynist and telling them our doors are open if they want to come in and debate with us. We have been open in our locations, but I don't want to give the wrong impression. We do not feel very secure. We have a few guards around us, and I try not to be there for very long periods because I expect that I would be targeted, and my being there for long periods could be jeopardizing the other activists.
I know you opposed the invasion of Iraq right from the start. But have the U.S. troops in Iraq been of any help to you in your work as a women's activist?
On the day which I received the death threat that told me that I will be killed, I was going to be killed in a few days, I knocked their doors and I told them, just like you are providing facilities and some help for the tribal heads, the ethnic heads, the religious heads. You give them cars, bodyguards, and ways to protect themselves. I need the same. On that day, the answer to me was, and it wasn't directly from the official. He said it to his assistant. The assistant said it to a soldier. The soldier said it to the information man in the front gate. And they told me, oh, you are not the only one targeted. We cannot give protection to everybody who knocks our doors. So what kind of support did I get from them? Nothing.
What kind of protection do you have?
With the few funds that we get from our supporters, I am able to get a bodyguard, one bodyguard that stays with me most of the time, and some guards for the organization. What can that do in front of a police squad that could invade our organization at any point they feel like it? Nothing. That's the security that we have now.
Are you getting the support of women in Iraq? Do women want the rights back that they've lost? And even if they do, are they afraid to say that?
You know, sometimes when I make a protest demonstration or speak over the television, some people try to tell me, oh, who do you represent? Just yourself. Well, you know, some of them try to keep the world under the impression that women of Iraq do not want freedom, do not want to live better off, do not want to have higher self-esteem. But who are they kidding? Who likes to be slapped around at home? And who would like to watch their husband marry another wife and just to shut up and watch? You know, I have received, I would say with no exaggeration during these years, hundreds of telephone calls, emails, and some visits in my organization telling me that, Yanar, you were the only one who spoke of our daily sufferings. We do not dare to say them in front of our husbands or our brothers, and this means a lot.
Something that's been very confusing about Iraq is, on the one hand, the new constitution has an article that says that Iraqis are equal before the law without discrimination due to sex. But at the same time, the constitution also says that no law can be passed that contradicts the established rulings of Islam. So what takes precedent there? Do women have equal rights, or are women subjected to Sharia, which is Islamic law, which does not give women equal rights?
The Sharia will be the base foundation for legislation in Iraq. So they have imposed on us that Islamic Sharia prevails, and anything in discrepancy with Islamic Sharia will not be allowed. Islamic Sharia allows a woman, a female, to be married at 9-year-old. Islamic Sharia allows multiple wives for one man. Islamic Sharia gives all the rights to men for divorce and for custody. So you cannot go against those. And we have now an Article 41 in the Constitution that says women can choose their family law, whether to be dominated by the Islamic Sharia or to be referring to the previous personal code in the country. But tell me, if you are a woman surrounded by a big number of misogynist males in your tribe and you go to a court, can you tell them, I do not want the Islamic Sharia to rule my family life? Like, who are they kidding? They have left millions of women in Iraq vulnerable to their religious laws.
Do you know men in Iraq who seem to be perfectly comfortable with women's rights and the equality of women, and who now seem perfectly comfortable denying women those rights? In other words, are you surprised at how some of the men you know have changed as the situation has changed in Iraq?
Well, the important part of the story is that women's rights is a political issue. And the political wave that runs in the country, that affects a lot of what the society's tendency is like, and especially the prevailing class, because they have all the media, they write the rules, and they show tremendous number of religious shows from day to night to all the males of the country, some of whom happen to be opportunists and want to have seats in the government, and for them it's more convenient to choose those norms where, first, by choosing them, they are respected more by the prevailing class, which is the Islamists that are ruling now. And second, for them, it's more comfortable at home because they are being served by women who have been turned into servants inside their houses. So do I know of a number of men who have turned from progressive to reactionary inside Iraq? I would tell you yes, a lot. The prevailing politics, they affect a big number of people who are not really keen on human rights or do not have the access to the outer world or to the developed world where things are different for women, or have a very determined agenda of keeping the women equal to men. But then again, on the other hand, you have a good number of progressive men, and some of them are members of our organization, and they do help us push the women's issue very much ahead.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Anar Mohammed, speaking to Terry Gross earlier this month. Mohammed is the co-founder and president of the Organization for Women's Freedom in Iraq. She's featured in an article in the current issue of Ms. Magazine. You can find a link to the article on our website at freshair.npr.org, where you can also listen to the show and download a podcast.